If, as some say, there are an infinite number of branching realities where at each juncture another is formed, the one through which you move, and an alternative through which there moves an alternative you, then which has made the right choices? Which would be you, and which would you choose to be if given that luxury? I know that I would not have left the Inuit. I would have stayed in my identity as Joseph Jordan. I felt secure. The fact that it may have been a figment of my imaginings rather than something that was real, a genuine manifestation of the phenomena of soul transmigration, is irrelevant. What matters is that I felt at home with that persona. I had purpose, I had meaning, things that have long since been denied to Theophilus Tanner. Was it my destiny? In the sense of a greater purpose from a divine being guiding me, then no, perhaps not. In the sense of finding a purpose for myself, in searching out a meaning for my continuing existence, then yes. Whether I am still in a padded room, whether I am in the 19th, 20th, 21st, or indeed beyond century, it does not matter. The truth is that the notion of reality in that concrete sense has become a cat's cradle of perhaps, maybe, and possibly. I cannot say for certain. The only reality I can trust in any real sense is that which unfolds in front of me. If I stick with that, then I have a method in which to give my being a sense of purpose, a sense of worth, whether it lives in an outside, concrete reality, or whether it merely lives within the confines of my own skull and the limitless planes of my own mind. Whatever happens next, I have to find my own redemption. If I can work out what that should be...
Doc opened his eyes. His head was whirling with thoughts that were chasing their own tails. Momentarily, he thought that he may, after all, have made the Matrans chamber and returned to the frozen wastes of the north, that the last few days were nothing more than a fevered Matrans dream. But no, that couldn't be the case. First, he didn't feel as though his body had been bolted back together in the wrong order. He had no headache and no nausea. In fact, he felt better than he had for some time, as though he had been able to rest more fully than at any time in the past few years. Blinking, he also noted that wherever he may have landed, it was no Matrans chamber. There were no wisps of fading mist, no faintly pulsing disks in the floor, and no armaglass walls of any color you cared to mention. He had seen them all over the years. Instead of the hard floor he had expected beneath him, he found that he was reclining on a chaise covered with a red brocade and plush wrap that extended the length of the piece of furniture. As Doc was more than 6 feet and lay full length, without either legs or head dangling from the side, he judged that it had to be closer to 7 feet than 6 in length, with a medium hard cushion beneath his head to support it, no less. Someone had taken great care to make sure that he would be comfortable. Doc raised himself up into a sitting position, carefully at first, lest the initial impression be deceptive and he found his head spinning with sudden movement. But no, he was fine. The room was lit by oil lamps and tallow candles, soft and muted, but bright enough for the surrounding room to be clearly visible into every corner, which took some doing, as it was quite a large room. Stone, walls, ceiling, and floor, although there were patches of plasterwork that had been simply decorated with the kind of pictogram he had seen in Memphis. Was it day or night? He couldn't tell, as there were no windows. Hence the array of lamps and candles, for all hours. A cell, then? He doubted if a cell would have such lighting, or such decoration and furniture. For the rest of the room was sparse, but had pieces that bespoke of quality. There was a table and 3 straight wooden chairs that were carved with grace and simplicity. A stunted tree stood in an earthenware pot in the corner of the room. Hangings on the wall, in red, black, and white, carried hieroglyph messages and stories. Black? Not Memphis, then. His eye traveled past the hangings until he noticed this. Looking more closely, he could see all decoration in the room carried black as well as the white and red he associated with Memphis. This had to be Atlantis. But why? There was another chaise in the room, its raised back to him. Only one. Assuming it had an occupant, that would mean that either the rest of the companions had been taken elsewhere, or that just two of them had been snatched. Doc stood and flexed his limbs. It was truly remarkable how fit he felt. And not just in his body, which seemed to have a whole new surge of energy flowing through it. He felt sharper in the mind, as though a whole weight of doubt, fear, and confusion had been lifted from him. Time to see who, if anyone, was on the chaise. He strode across the room with renewed vigor and peered over the raised back. He saw Christy laying there. As he loomed over her, he saw her eyelids flicker as she began to awaken.
Good. Well, I cannot say if it is morning or evening, or indeed afternoon, for I do not know. But welcome back to the land of the living.
You sure about that, Doc? I feel like someone in one of those old fables Mother Sonia used to tell me when I was a child. Some woman who slept for 100 years.
Rip Van Winkle slept for 100 years, although he was not, as far as I am aware, a woman. Perhaps your guardian was speaking of Sleeping Beauty. It's heartening to know that stories such as that survived even the rigors of Skydark. Nonetheless, I feel I should point out that in all probability it is far more likely to be merely a few hours that we have rested.
Yeah, but what a rest! Ugh, I feel great.
Refreshed? Full of vigor? Greater strength and clearness of mind than for some considerable time?
You too, huh? Remind me to thank whoever took us and imprisoned us for such a beneficial method of capture.
How pleasant to know that your renewed energy has only sharpened your tongue. You may yet attain the heights of the sainted Dr. Wyeth.
Thanks for the compliment, I think. Does it strike you that this isn't too much like a prison?
I must confess that the thought had occurred to me. I suspect that the lack of an outside view is determined more by architecture than a desire to keep us incarcerated. It would also be absurd to have such fine hangings and furniture in a cell designed to keep us as demoralized prisoners. I assume, by the by, that you have realized that we are in Atlantis?
Christy was casting a searching eye around the room for the first time.
It seemed unlikely that we were anywhere in Memphis, but what makes you sure?
Doc pointed out the use of black in the designs.
The third occult color. I assume that in Memphis it isn't used as a way of disowning the past, casting out the darkness and the magic, if you like. It is a trifle simplistic, but commonly black was bad magic, white good.
So just the two of us?
It would appear that way, unless the others are being kept elsewhere.
Figures. But why would they do that?
Why would they take us and leave the others? Only if they had some knowledge of our presence and decided that...
Trouble in paradise, right? Some of the escapees didn't exactly escape. If that was so, then I can understand them taking you. It must be common knowledge that you have an understanding of their religion that is just plain weird for an outsider. But why me?
You have some uncommonly beautiful features.
Doc pointed to her hair.
To someone who has little or no experience of mutation, then it could appear to be...
magic.
Indubitably.
Great. So now we're in Atlantis and have no idea where the others are, or even...
If they are still alive. Can you remember anything about how we were taken? All I have are a few impressions. Footfalls, preparing defense, then...
Eyes. I remember eyes that bore into me, sapped all my will. Hypnosis.
Undoubtedly. We were singled out. The fact that we are now alone, I think that until we have evidence to the contrary, we have to assume that the others have been chilled.
It was something that had been in both their minds since discovering they were alone, but until now they had been reluctant to acknowledge it.
Just us, then. We owe them something. To try.
I agree with you, my dear.
He briefly laid a hand on her shoulder before looking away.
Now, let us see if we can find some way of getting out of here.
There was only one point of exit. The doorway was ostentatiously covered with plaster carved into spirals, decorated with hieroglyphs. The Atlanteans weren't overly concerned with decoration, but when they decided to decorate, they did it with some panache. And there, in the middle of the portico, on the left-hand side of the door, was an inset combination lock. Christy experimentally pushed at the door, which was solid and unyielding.
Ah, I didn't think we'd get that lucky.
Perhaps we will.
Doc examined the lock. It was comprised of three rows of stones, four abreast. They were red, white, and black. And as he moved them, he saw that they worked as a tumbler, moving each way.
An interesting little puzzle. Obviously a color code combination.
Christy watched him fiddle with the tumbler.
Yeah, but how many combinations can there be in there before you hit the right one?
Doc looked up at her and grinned.
Chance is an interesting thing, my dear girl. And frankly, there is very little else occurring right now to take up our time, is there?
Time is the one thing we need, and the one thing we don't have.
When's it ever been any different?
True. Don't make it any easier, though.
The four remaining companions were in Lemure and Cyan's main room, seated around the long table. The Vill leader and his wife were also there, as well as the sect chief, Mark. Outside in the corridor were the sect men who had been with Lemure and Mark when they had discovered the companions. They were waiting, under guard, from a phalanx of sect men, in whom Mark had an implicit trust. It didn't ensure their complete fidelity, but Ryan trusted Mark enough to place an equal trust in his judgment. Not that there was much else he could do.
We shall have to bring all our plans forward and make our attack now.
That assumes that we have something that can actually be defined as a plan.
Is there a plan? Stop pacing and answer me.
Lemure stopped and shook his head.
Mark is right. We have this aim, but without having a force worthy of the title, there was little point in making concrete plans. But how difficult can it be? Fighting is fighting.
Chilling is chilling. Buying farm is buying farm. Not just fighting. Not done this. Your men always working without weapons, only tools. Huh?
If I understand your vernacular correctly, I was a clerk drawing plans for the vessel, accounting for stone delivery and transportation from origins to building site.
So you haven't thought about the fact that winning a battle isn't just about who can hit harder, who has the bigger blaster. Just how did you think you were going to get into Atlantis in the first place?
I had trust in Mark.
And I assumed you had a plan, Lemure. How stupid does that make me?
It makes you someone who had trust in your leader. That's something you're supposed to have. Sitting here bitching and fighting over it isn't going to help us now. We need to get our asses moving if we're to stand any chance of saving Doc and Christy.
And if we have spies in our midst, then we won't be safe until they're eliminated. And as that would take some time, the only other option is to try to eradicate their reason for spying.
Damn right. There's no point in any long-term planning if it could be leaked. And if Odyssey gets anything at all from Doc and Christy, then he's going to want to wipe the rest of us out. And shit, he can't repeat the same trick because we'll be wise to it.
I still don't know how the Nightcrawlers managed to get the gate guard to open up. But the sect party on patrol did encounter them on the way. Two of them were killed, two more rendered unconscious, and four returned unharmed.
Then that's how they gained access. You've got a spy in that sect party.
How can that be? Two were killed, two more attacked.
Dark Knight, Cyan, it's obvious. Why were two only knocked out? Why not chill them like the other two? If they were able to get past them without four even seeing them, then why bother even wasting time chilling those two? They didn't chill anyone unnecessarily while they were within the Vill walls, did they?
Mark screwed up his face in frustration and slapped his palm against his forehead.
Oh, I do not deserve my position. How could I be so stupid? Kill two, render two unconscious, then it is no surprise if one or the other goes missing during the course of the patrol. The one who leads them to the gates lures out the guard, and then furthermore leads them to where they can find you.
A spy with the blood of their fellows on their hands, for this night alone.
Got there in the end. You people don't think like fighters, do you?
Madam, is it such a surprise? We've not been trained as fighters. Only those who become sect in Atlantis are ever taught such skills. To teach the general populace such things would only invite rebellion from those of us who wish to escape.
Okay, okay. Too many recriminations, not enough action. Mistakes have been made, but fuck that. It doesn't matter now, not after what's happened. What's important is that we start right now getting it right.
Then we must try to ensure that no word can escape from Memphis on this night.
How the hell can we ensure that, Mark? They've been damn good at sneaking it out up until now.
Mark allowed himself the ghost of a bleak smile.
That's because we have not been aware of them. Words exchanged within the walls, one on the sec force, who is not who he seems, a rendezvous or dropping point for a written exposition, it isn't that hard if you have the security of knowing you have been working undetected. But it may be more difficult if we seal the vill.
I get you. Anyone who tries to get over the walls alerts us via the alarm system. So you sew up the only way in which they can get out undetected. Completely reliable gate guards.
Yeah, precisely. That will have to be some of your people, Ryan. I must stay and liaise with yourself and the leader in planning an attack. And I can no longer take as fact that my own people are reliable.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Jack and Mildred would be best. JB is my right hand when it comes to planning a firefight. Jack can patrol the walls. Mildred can take the gate. You okay with that?
You're the boss, Ryan. Gotta go with your call.
Jack didn't bother to waste words, merely nodding briefly.
Good. Keep going. Seal this bastard tight. When we're ready to roll, I'll fill you in on the game plan.
As the two companions left to take up their positions, Ryan turned to Lemure and Mark. Cyan drifted away from them, knowing that her presence wasn't necessary.
JB will need to know exactly what's in your armory. We also need to know what kind of manpower you can muster, and what we're facing.